Hillel describes that Chazal instituted the days of Purim as La'atzos Asam Yemei Mishne V'Simcha, so the days of Simcha. So the idea of having a Yom Simcha, a day that's dedicated to Simcha, is not the first time we find this in Halacha. So we said already mentioned yesterday, they called the Tikkun Rabbanon, came the Raisa Tikkun. Rebbe Chazal instituted Din Derabbanon, so they have a pattern, they have some kind of a Din Deraisa. So what was the Din Deraisa of Simcha? Where do we find in the Torah this model of Yom Simcha? We find in Yom Tovim, there's a Mitzvah Deraisa of a Samachta B'chagecha, and the Shalosh Regalim Peshua, maybe a Shem Kippur according to many. So there is a concept of having a day that's dedicated to being Yom Simcha. So when Chazal instituted Purim, so Mestama they instituted Purim, Ke'ein the Yom Deraisa of Simchat Yom Tov. Nevertheless, we find that even though Purim is dedicated to the day of Simcha, there are some very real differences, perhaps some very real differences between the way Simcha expressed itself on Purim and the way Simcha expressed itself on the other Yom Tovim. So there is a Gemara in Maseches Mikotin that tells us that one is not allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed. That's an issur min HaTorah. There's an issur min DeRabbanan of getting married on a regular Shabbos. There's a Gezeir Meshomek Echol Memker. We're afraid you may write the Ksubi, you may write the Torah, you may write other things down. So the same way, not allowed to buy and sell on any Shabbos in Yom Tov, you're not allowed to get married on Shabbos in Yom Tov either. But that's only Nisim and Rabbanan. But there's a Nisim D'Araisa to have Nisuin, that's Kiddush, to have Nisuin on Yom Tov, or even on Chol HaMoed for that matter. Why is it also in the Torah? Because Eim Arvin Simcha B'Simcha. How do you know Eim Arvin Simcha B'Simcha? That's what the Gemara in Mekotin quotes a whole series of different Mekairos for that idea. But there's a Din in the Torah called the Eim Arvin Simcha B'Simcha. So the question becomes, what about on Purim? Would that din carry over to Purim also? Would we say that Einosim Nashim on Purim? Would we say that there's an Isser to get married on Purim? Or do we say, no, that maybe Purim is different from Yom Tov? So the Shulchan Aruch, at the very end of the Purim, quotes Lekula. He quotes that it's permissible to get married on Purim. And not everyone agrees. There's some Achronim who say that maybe one should not get married on Purim. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Rav Shlomo Zalman Orpah got married on Purim. I think you could check that on Google somewhere. We can ask that in next year's trivia questions on Purim. But I think Rav Shlomo Zalman get married actually on Purim itself. Yes, must have been Shushan Purim, must have been Purim in Yerushalayim. So the question is, why should that be so? Why should it be permissible? Mikra din Shulchan Aruch paskin that it's mutter. We paskin that it's really mutter. So why should it be different? If we're really patterning Purim after Yom Tov, what is the difference between the two? So there is a lamda shavart that suggested that maybe there's a fundamental difference between Yom Tov and Purim in the following sense: that Yom Tov, so the very day of Yom Tov, is nitvas b'simcha. That it's hard to use the word cheftza when you're dealing about a time element, but you get the basic idea. That the time, the essence of a day of Yom Tov, is nitvas as a zman simcha. Whereas on Purim, Purim is not per se an essence of the day of simcha. On Purim, there's a mitzvah sagavra that you have to perform acts of simcha. You have to express yourself. You have to do fun things. Not fun things, we'll see what that means exactly. You have to do dvarim shel simcha on Purim as a mitzvah sagavra. But mitama cheftza, mitama zman proper, so the zman itself is not really nitfos as a zman simcha. If that's the case, then maybe we can understand the distinction between getting married on Yom Tov, getting married on Purim. Get married on Yom Tov, so that's detracting from the Simchas Hayom, that the entire focus of the Yom, 24 hours of the Yom, has to be focusing on Simchas HaRegel. If you go ahead and you interfere and get married and have a Simchas with your wife, so that's going to detract from the Simchas HaRegel. Enkein on Purim, where the whole day is not a nitfos as a Yom Simcha, it's just that during the course of the day you have to do certain maisim, hamesamchem, basa yayim, whatever those maisim hamesamchem are, so then I can do that. So I'll eat my suda in the morning and then I'll get married in the afternoon. And I can do both. So it's only on Yom Tov when you have that model that Yom Tov is legamri nitzvah, so zman simcha, every moment of the day is called zman simcha, then and only then does that interfere with the ability to get married on Yom Tov. If that would be so, that Yom Tov and Purim are really, really different in that sense, so that would probably explain the Rishonim who say that there is a veilus on Purim. There's a big machlokes in Rishonim whether Hilchos Avelus applies on Purim. The Rambam Shita is that Avelus applies in full force on Purim, and the Ramah disagrees. The Ramah quotes Ashkenaz Rishonim will disagree, who hold that Avelus on Purim is pretty much like Avelus on Yom Tov. That, you know, you only know Dvarim Shebitzina, you're not really knowing Dvarim Shebefahesya. So according to those who say that there's full-fledged Avelus on Purim, so I can understand that. Because Purim is not a day that's a stira to Avelus, per se. You can have Avelus, and during the course of the day, you'll have your Basri Yayin, you'll have your Simchas Yom Tov, you'll fulfill your Mitzvah Sayom, even though the day itself is Nitzvah, because the day itself is not Nitzvah as a Yom Simcha, so it can double as a Yom Avel. She'en Kein, the Ramah seems to be assuming that Purim can't have a veil. It's not shach to have veils on Purim, because Purim is a Yom Sukkah, the day itself. But the truth is that even the Ramah says that you're not knowing a veil on Purim, even the Ramah agrees it's not the same as Yom Tif. Because Yom Tif, the days of Yom Tif don't count towards a veil. Let's say, for example, a person buries his mace in Chol HaMoed, so the whole of Shiva is pushed off to lift the Yom Tif, and the minyan Shiva doesn't start yet. The days of Shiva don't begin until afterwards. Mashen Ken on Purim, so the Purim does count towards the week of Shiva. So even according to the Ramah, that there's no real Avelus on Purim, it's still not the same as Yom Tif. So maybe this idea is correct, according to everybody, that Purim and Yom Tif are not quite the same. Why should that be so? Why should it be that when Chazal formulated Simchas Purim, why didn't they create the model like Yom Tif? Why didn't they make it mamish like Yom Tif? That the whole day should be a Yom Simcha, 24 hours should be mamish, permeated the air with Simcha. So maybe this is based on a famous sheet of the Nesivos. The Nesivos has a chiddush that there's a difference between if a person violates an Issa Deraisa and a person violates an Issa Derabanan B'Shogeg. If a person violates an Issa Deraisa B'Shogeg, so you have to tshuva. There's an Issa tshuva. The Rambam writes in Uchas tshuva that you have to be chayzi b'tshuva, both for Mezer and B'Shogeg. So if a person by mistake in Chazer, so you can't say, well, it wasn't my fault, I didn't know it was Chazer and B'Shogeg. No. True, you're not b'chay ma'olchus for it. The onus is going to be significantly less, but you still require a kaparas avodis. You still require a tshuva to be to clear the air. You still require the roots of tshuva. Let's say a person ate bishalachim by mistake. A person ate some treifus with the rabbanon, violated muktzah by mistake or something. So the nesivos writes that there's no need to do tshuva. There's no mitzvah tshuva at all. Why? What's the difference between the two? So the Meshech Chochma in Parsha Shoftim explains that what the nesivos is driving at is that the Raisas and the Rabbanans are very, very different from one another. That the Raisas, so the very object itself, is nitfas be'isser. We have a piece of meat that's chazir, and the veil is treifus, etc. So there's something intrinsically wrong with this item. There are spiritual properties that are problematic with this item. Well, let's say you have a yom that's also the malachim in the Torah, so there's something about the yom itself that's screaming out to me, this day, you can't do malachim this day. So then Meshech Chochma explains, whether you did it, it's amazing. It'd be showing you at the end of the day, you did it. At the end of the day, you ate that spiritually impure thing. It's like Moshe Mal Devadamia, a person swallows poison. And then they realize, oh yeah, I made a mistake, I swallowed poison. So they rush him to the emergency room. So when they're about to pump his stomach, he says, no, don't pump my stomach, because it's on the Bishagay. Oh, good, Bachshav, it's on the Bishagay. It's ridiculous. If the poison went in, whether it went in, it made it Bishagay, the mice went in. So Averis, Isurim, are poison to the Neshama. So they go in, whether you like it, you don't like it, whether you planned it, you didn't plan it. So now you have to deal with the consequences. So the antidote for the poison of an Aveira is tshuva. So when you do tshuva, so that gets out, that negates all the evil effects of what the chait was. And that's what the Meshech Chochma explains. If a medivah mamurim, that makes any sense. That's what we're dealing with their Isis, because the Rabban Shom created the world. So the Rabban Shom created the spiritual properties of these items. So the Rabban Shom was great there that chaz rest negative spiritual properties on a Jewish soul. So if a person, a Jewish soul, experienced that achilas chaz, so you got to get it out in any shape or form through the mere vehicle of tshuva, whether it was b'mezid or b'shegeg. Masha'in came with dealing with the Rabbanan. Bishalachim was led by the Chachamim. So the Chachamim can't change the Tev. The Chachamim can't make up spiritual properties. So the spiritual properties are made up by the Rabban Shalom. What can the Chachamim do? So the Meshech Chochma gives the marshal. He says that if you look in Parsha Shoftim, so the Torah says you have to listen to the Chachamim, and then the next Parsha says, the next Pesukim says you have to listen to the king also. What's the connection between the king and the Chachamim? So the Meshech Chochma says, let's say a king makes a decree that nobody's allowed to eat vanilla ice cream. Makes the Chomach Huso, right? He sends out the letters of Achashverosh, nobody, Leos Kalish, not to eat vanilla ice cream. And if a person goes ahead and eats the vanilla ice cream, so he's Moir B'Malchus, he's Chayv Misa. So says the Meshech Chochma, is there anything wrong with vanilla ice cream? But the king made a cheftza from vanilla ice cream is also, and what if tomorrow he says you can't eat chocolate ice cream? So now vanilla becomes okay and chocolate becomes mutter? It's a joke. So what's up, Shah? So why is that the Torah uphold the authority of the king? For that very reason, because the Torah wants to uphold the authority of the king. The Torah wants that there should be a king, there should be a din of a melech, and emosa alecha, and you're not supposed to be married by malchus. So whatever the king says goes, so that becomes the rule, not because there's anything intrinsically value with what the king is saying. If the king's mamash b'shogeg and he starts to say all kinds of things negative the dini ha-Torah, then you're not allowed to listen. Kol she'yamar spicha yumos only applies with shaloka neged ha-alocha. If he starts to tell you that you have to eat chaz, you have to eat treif, you have to do malach on Shabbos, so he has no koach to do that, then you're not allowed to listen. But if he tells you the bar b'rishus, so it makes some kind of sense what he's saying, so then you're mechuyav to listen to him, and not because he actually changed the teva of the ice cream. So the Shulchan Aruch argues that the same is true for the Beis Din. When the Beis Din makes a takana, so they don't really change the tev of anything. They don't really create an isur bishalachim. They just tell you that we as the Rabbanim think that you shouldn't eat bishalachim for reason X, Y, and Z. The person who eats bishalachim, so he's the mezalzel on the covenant of Chachamim. He's going up against the Chachmei Torah. So it's a rebellion against the authority of Chachmei Torah. That's a problem. So that's the Shulchan Aruch. That makes any sense. That's the Beis Din. But if you did it bishalachim, I'm not rebelling against anything. So if I did it bishalachim, I didn't do anything wrong. So an avera, the raisa b'meizid, is called b'shogeg, is called the chetz of an avera. An avera b'shogeg, midrabban, it's not even called the chetz of an avera, because the whole machus of the yisr, the essence of the yisr, is a mered b'chazal, and you can't be moreid unless you're being moreid in Teshkev. You can't have a mistaken revolution. Unless you're planning a revolution, the revolution is not chal. So that's the pshat that, yeah, not everybody agrees to this. There are gedolei achronim who disagree with this whole shtetzer, but within that idea that Yisurim d'Rabbanan, Yisurim d'Oraisa may part ways, so maybe that's what's going on here in Simchas Hayom as well. But this idea that you're going to declare a day to be a Yom Shel Simcha, you're going to permeate a day with the characteristics of Simcha, a day is going to be called the Yom Simcha, where Nitzvah says the Yom Simcha. So that ability only exists for the Rabban Shalom. The Rabban Shalom could say today is a joyful day. So the Rabban Shalom says the Samach Bechagecha, so Purim, so Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot become days of Simcha. Purim, the Rabban Shalom didn't say Purim is Yom Simcha. Kibum Asher Kibum. Okay, the Rabban Shalom accepted that what the Chabam said. So maybe the Chabam don't have the koach, they don't have the authority to transform Teva. They don't have the ability to transform Teva, and therefore they could tell you as a gavra to listen to us. They can instruct you. We think it's a good idea to have a suit that busts the yayin, but we can't change the essence of the day. And since we can't change the essence of the day, so then it's not a Yom Simcha min HaTorah, it's not a Yom Simcha b'chlal, it's a day that requires ma'isim simcha, and therefore there wouldn't be anything wrong with getting married on this day. Maybe that would be the pshat. Those who disagree with this, Dolei Achronim would disagree with this whole story. Yosef Engel, the Sefer Aspen D'Araisa disagrees with this whole Mishnah. Yosef Engel thinks that Yisurim D'Rabbanan are considered to be Yisurim Chetza, it's the same as D'Araisa's. They do take on all the characteristics. How is that? So Mishnah, that's because of Kibbutz Moshe Kippur. It means that the Rabban Shalom signs off on Yisurim D'Rabbanan. The Rabban Shalom gave the koach to the Chachmei HaTorah to do this, to change Teva. That the Chacham can declare that this is a Yom Simcha. Chacham can declare that this Bishalachim is treif. The Chacham do have that kach that was granted to them by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. So this is a major, major machlokes about how to view the Rabbanim and the Raisim in general, and it may have some interesting impact in terms of that take on Hilchos Purim.
Does that mean that the Yisur Rabbanim is going to be Yisur Chayiv Mishogeg also?
So according to those who disagree with them, yeah, there are others who disagree with them. Yeah, Rias Vengel disagrees with that. But whether or not Simchas Purim is identical to Simchas Yontif, or whether it's similar to Simchas Yontif, it's patterned different to Simchas Yontif, at the end of the day, there are definitely certain similarities. And the Rambam drives home the similarities in the clearest way, because the way the Rambam describes the celebration of Yontif is almost identical to how the Rambam describes the celebration of Purim. When it comes to Yontif, so the Gemara has a whole discussion in the sixth parak of Maseches Pesachim, and then again in the tenth parak of Maseches Pesachim, about how exactly one celebrates Yontif. What exactly is Simchas Yontif? The Gemara says that the Ikar Simchas Yontif is Achilas Pesach Shlomim. Everyone in the Shal Shagalim, you have to come to the Beis HaMikdash and offer a whole series of Kabbanas. You have to bring Karban Ola, you have to bring Shalmei Chagiga, and you have to bring Shalmei Simcha. And everybody has to partake of the meat of the Shalmei Simcha, and the eating of the meat of the Shalmei Simcha, in Yerushalayim, the Kedusha V'Tara, that is the Kabbanas HaTara of Mesabach V'Chagiach. That's what Mesabach V'Chagiach means. The Gemara derives that from Sukkim. It says, in a different context, so that is the official Torah definition of Simcha, is Achilas Pesach Shlomim in Yerushalayim. So now the Gemara raises the question, what do we do Bizman Hazeh? We don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore, no one's eating Pesach Shlomim anymore, what do we do? The Gemara says Bizman Hazeh, Nebuch, we can't do the Simcha the way it's supposed to be, so we have the second level of Simcha, we have what's called Shar Simachos. And the Gemara says, "Ein simcha l'biyayin," or for women, the Gemara says, "Ein simcha l'tachshitim," buy your wife jewelry, nice clothing, those who give kids candy, things like that. The Gemara says, "Every person, whatever makes them happy, so that's the simcha that we have bizman hazeh." So there's a big machlokes, and we've shown them how to understand that progression in the Gemara. The Gemara starts off with this grandiose model and saying that bizman should be something shakayim, ein simcha l'bechis b'sash shlomim, or bizman hazeh, ein simcha l'biyayin. So Tosfos in Makandaf Yudalit says that model means that the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif doesn't apply anymore. Min HaTorah. That midaraisa simchas yontif has one very objective definition, achiras b'sar shlamim. Once that can no longer be fulfilled, then there's no simcha on the level of deraisa. We still have simcha on yontif today, we still have basa, yeah, and all that. It's all midirabban and testizes. The entire simchas yontif is played out in toshanayin test, is all midirabban because there's no basic mikdash. And the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam simchas yontif clearly disagrees with Taisus. The Rambam writes that there are two levels of simchas yontif. The simchas yontif of mikdash, and then the simchas yontif of chutz mikdash. So if you live at a time and there's nobody said mikdash, you also have simchas yontif. That simchas yontif expressed itself in the Shai Smacha. So it's not that it doesn't exist in the Torah. It's a lower level. It's not the ultimate. It's not the primary simchas yontif, but still is very much a mitzvah midaraisa according to the Rambam, even bizman hazeh. So what is this mitzvah? Whether the raisa the rabbanon, what are you supposed to do? So the Gemara says ain't simchal biyai, and that's the phrase that the Gemara says. So the Rambam in Hilchos Yontif, when he quotes this din, the Rambam writes, bizman hazeh, how do you celebrate Yontif? Ain't simcha el bebosa biyayin. Where'd the bosa come from? So the Rambam obviously learned that the bosa that we have today is like ke'ein the b'sar shlomim. That means for the fact that the Torah says you have to have b'sar shlomim for simchas yontif, that's built into the system. Of course bosa is necessary. Obviously you need bosa for simchas yontif. That was never a question. So bizman hamikdash has to be dafke b'sar shlomim. Bizman hazeh nefek. It could be a hot dog also. It could be a regular piece of pastrami. It could be some other kind of bosa. But you have to have bosa. Without bosa, so then you're obviously lacking simcha. And then the Gemara is adding on. If bizman hazeh, you have to make up. You have to, besides bosa, you have to have yayin also. So we have a nebuch watered down simcha, but at least it's a simcha deraisa, says the Rambam. But the two components that make up that simcha are bosa v'yayin. That's what the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yomtev. So the Beis Yosef, when he quotes that Rambam, is very startled by the Rambam's presentation, because the Beis Yosef says that if you look at the Gemara, the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says that bizman hamikdash is b'sar shlam, and bizman hazeh is ain't simcha l'biyayin, and the Gemara never says boo, never says a word about eating hot dogs and hamburgers, bizman hazeh and yontif. There's no mention of ain't simcha l'bebosar. The Rambam understood it. The Rambam said that's obvious. If b'sar shlam was the primary definition of bizman hamikdash, so you have to have some kind of bosar bizman hazeh. But the Beis Yosef says he never heard of such a thing. He doesn't say it anywhere in the Gemara. And therefore in Shulchan Aruch, at the end of Hilchos Yontif, where the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Din of Hilchos Yontif, the Shulchan Aruch left out the phrase Basa. The Shulchan Aruch just writes, Ein Simcha El B'yayim. I was, years ago, somebody showed me a Gadol Kol Kore that said that it's a terrible thing that people eat pizza on Chol HaMoed. They didn't mean Chol HaMoed Pesach, that would be really bad. Chol HaMoed Sukkot, it's a bad thing. People go to pizza stores, they take the kids out, everyone should go eat a fleishik meal, because everybody knows the din is you have to have basar on Yontif. And it says, as it says explicitly in Shulchan Aruch, and at the end of Hilchos Yontif, Ein Simcha El B'basar V'yayin. That was an absurd quote, because that's exactly what the Shulchan Aruch says. Nah, Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef quotes the Rambam and disagrees with it. If the fellow who wrote that Kol Kore would have said that, as it says the Rambam, okay, that would have been a true statement. So you have to decide whether you pass it that way. But to mislead people by telling them it says that Shulchan Aruch Ein Simcha El B'basar V'yayin is an absolute misquote. So anyway, so the Rambam does say it. The Rambam Hilchos Yontif does write it, and then the later Chalim write, we should try to follow the Rambam. The Rambam Mishabur say, we should try on Yontif, we should try to follow the Rambam Sheet, we should try to flesh it meals on Yontif. So the Rambam Hilchos Purim, following in his own footsteps, now the Rambam, when he formulates the dinim of Simchan Purim, basically quotes himself. The Rambam, the end of Hilchos Megillah writes, that Ketel Chayva Sudazu, how do you fulfill the mitzvah of Sudas Purim? So the Rambam writes, Ochel Bosa, Shesiyayin. So the Rambam writes, you have to have bosa v'yayin. You have to have bosa v'yayin present at the Purim Suda, or else that's not the model of Simcha. If the Pesach says, last something, you may mishti v'simcha. Chazal v'chiver has to be a Suda shal Simcha. So just as Suda shal Simcha of Yontif has to have bosa v'yayin, so too the Simcha of Purim has to have bosa v'yayin as well. So it's a little bit strange that the Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Purim quotes that, but in Hilchos Yontif he left it out. So the Hilchos Purim, he has bosa, he has to have fleshy Purim Suda, the Shulchan Aruch says, whereas on Yontif the Shulchan Aruch was not convinced that you have to have bosa. So it's a little bit of a strange idea. But the way we're knowing, we try to have fleshy, hopefully on Yontif also, so we follow the Rambam. We're going to finish we're saying it's preferable to follow the Rambam. So that's where we're consistent, that we have fleshy, most of us try to have fleshy meals on Yontif, we try to have fleshy Purim Suda. It's all Lashit Nasein, and that's all considered to be the proper method of fulfilling the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif properly, or Simchas Purim properly. The Megillah describes the days of Purim as being L'Atzos HaSam Yimei Mishtev Simcha. So in addition to Simcha, which anyway would require Yayin, so the Megillah makes reference to the fact that Purim is Yimei Mishtev also. There are also additional days of drinking. There's some kind of added component in Halacha of drinking on Purim that maybe doesn't exist in other Yavim Tovim. Why should it be an added component? What does that have to do with anything? So the Levush is the famous comment. The Levush says that he thinks that Chazal made a special takana to drink a little bit extra on Purim, not also because you're on the Vals Yimei Mishnah, as a Zecha to the Neis. We always try to remember all the different components of the Neis that played out. So one of the major components of the Neis was the Mishnah Yayin. Everyone's having parties. The Cheshver's having parties. Haman's coming to parties. Esther's making parties. Vashti's, everyone's drinking Mishnah Yayin. So since Yayin was such a major component of the Neis, so Chazal made a special takana to have a little bit more wine on Purim in order to fulfill that din of Yimei Mishnah v'Simcha. So Simcha in of itself requires Yayin, because that's Bosa V'Yayin, because that's Simcha's Yom Tif, and Yimei Mishnah is perhaps an added component. If that's the case, and it goes without saying, according to this Kavosh, it would only make sense if it's Mishnah Yayin. A person drinks other things on Purim, they have to do Mishnah Yayin. That's like a person has a milkshake on Purim, that's not Mishnah Yayin. So a person has a schnapps on Purim, that's not Mishnah Yayin. So they, one wouldn't fulfill anything, that would stand be a waste, and it would be viewed through the eyes of any other drinking throughout the year, which obviously we frown upon with a significant degree. So therefore there would be no reason, there would be no kiyum, no fulfillment, there would be no reason whatsoever to drink anything else except for wine on Purim. But the question now becomes, what is necessary to fulfill this obligation? If the Megillah, assuming this obligation exists, if the Megillah seems to be alluding to the fact that it has to be Yimei Mishnah v'Simcha, so what exactly has to go into this drinking of to fulfill the din of Yimei Mishnah? So it's in this background that the Gemara has that startling statement in the first breath of Maseches Megillah. The Gemara says, Chai v'anu l'v'suvi p'urai ad lo yada, the person has to drink X amount in order to reach that, reach the stage of not knowing the Tzim Mordechai and Haman. So what the Gemara seems to be saying is that that's the shilad over, that's the amount that you have to drink. It's not enough to have a drop, not enough to have one medicine dropper of wine. You have to drink enough that it gets you to that point of avad lo yada. That's what the simple reading of the Gemara is. So there is a big machlekes in Rishonim whether we even pass like this Gemara altogether. And then there's another machlekes in Rishonim what in the world the Gemara said. So the end of the story, that Gemara said as Megillah, first the Gemara tells the statement about Rava that you have to do it. Then the Gemara tells about a very scary story that happened at Rava and Rabbi Zeir's Purim Suda, where one killed the other, and that's Chesemates, the whole story. Whether it was literal or figurative, embarrassed and put in a bad Purim, whatever happened exactly, it's not clear. But you don't get the impression of the Gemara that this was such a very good thing to do. So that's what there was some Rishonim, Rabbi Ephraim, was one of the Tamidim of the Rif. So Rabbi Ephraim writes that he thinks that the reason why the Gemara tells the end of the story, why do we care what happened to Rava and Rabbi Zeir's Purim Suda, was that important for us? Because that was the Gemara's way of saying that we shouldn't follow the din of Rava. That was Ravina Rav Ashi. They got the last word in. So the fact that Ravina Rav Ashi brought this story to highlight that the fulfillment of Rava's Shita did not have a very healthy consequence, that had a very good outcome. So therefore, the Gemara is possibly the later Amorim is possibly not to do it. The Yadavka not supposed to drink Adlo Yoda. So how do you fulfill the mitzvah of Yimei Mishnah according to if you reject Rava Shir? The Mustama of the Shir is that Ravias, I don't know, whatever the Shir is, but it's not Adlo Yoda, because that was rejected by the Gemara. That's what Rabbeinu Ephraim says. So other Rishonim don't say that. Shulchan Aruch does quote this din of Ad Lo Yada, but even within those Rishonim who say that Ad Lo Yada is accepted in the Halacha, so you had many, many Rishonim who said that Ad Lo Yada cannot possibly mean Kipshuto. There's no way in the world to interpret this Naiv Chazal according to the literal meaning of the Gemara, because that would be such a contradiction to everything the Chazal say throughout Shas about the terrible things about drinking. Chazal speak in very, very strong terms about drinking. Gemara's Maseches Sanhedrin, terrible things happen from drinking. Gemara's Maseches Brachos, they talk about the negative aspects of drinking. And they're psukim throughout Tanakh. The Nevuas of Yirmiyahu, they scream at the people, they were drinking, they took them in Treasar, people were drinking, they were getting drunk, they were doing Aveiros. You don't need Chazal to tell you, you don't need the Nevi'im to tell you, common sense tells you that. Of course drinking is a terrible, terrible thing. Of course it's against everything that a Torah lifestyle stands for. So how in the world was Chazal in the wildest dreams instituted such a thing called Ad Lo Yada? So there are more quotes from a whole group of Rishonim who say that it could not possibly have meant Kipshuto. All the Gemara meant was to drink a little bit more than you would normally drink, and then you put your head down, you fall asleep a little bit, you get a little, you're tired. Well, you dance to Chagigah till 3 in the morning, you wake up early to hear the Megillah at night, so you're tired, but you take a little drop of wine, and you put your head down for a few minutes, and sure, that's Ad Lo Yada. So there are more quotes that opinion, and then the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Prizeh Gadim, who says that's how we pass in the Halacha. That's the Chen Roy Lassus. The Mishnah Berurah says very clearly that is the correct Psak, that all the other Psakim are not correct, the Mishnah Berurah says, but the Chen Roy Lassus, that one is supposed to follow that view of the Ramah. So again, the whole thing is a fake speaker. We're not even sure that there's a mitzvah in the first place, because maybe Rabbeinu Ephraim's right, and even outside the Rabbeinu Ephraim's not right, so the Shear is much, much less than anybody says. So then, if you have your Zaiti, you want to ask somebody else, so I think that we should probably follow what it says in Mishnah Berurah. Pretty clear. We try to follow Mishnah Berurah most of the other times in life, so we should probably follow what the Mishnah Berurah's guidelines are in this as well. This is all assuming that a person is even old enough to drink anything. If a person's under 21, then they have to consult with the legal authorities about what they're allowed to do. So the best of my knowledge is no one's allowed to give them wine anyway. So then the shayla would be a moot shayla. They could steal one and serve both of them. How do you get wine? They're not allowed to give it to them. So I don't know. That would be a different shayla. So if you're under 21, you have to consult with the proper authorities. But if you're over 21, so then you consult with the Ramah and the Mishnah Berurah and the Supreme Rabbim, and you come to the Kisei HaKavod and they ask you, how come you didn't get the Adla Yad? They say, what do you mean? It's a fair share of Ramah. I followed with the Ramah. So you're not going to go there. No one's going to say you had him for this one. If you trust me. You're not going to. This is the last of your problems. You didn't fulfill Adla Yad. Okay.
What for women?
Women, the fascist says that the women don't drink. And then he gives the women the Sturbach writes in the safe, that the women should be drinking for. So the Mistabah of the is that it's such a breach of sneers, the Chazal would have a Mechayim. It doesn't say it's a favorish, but it's just the most of that.
There are not that there should be more than usual?
Yes, so hopefully he's talking to people who don't drink at all. So, so nobody had drinks, Baruch Hashem, nobody would ever drink anything.
Then how much do you use?
It's 3 ounces. 3 ounces of a 5% wine for someone over there. 21 is probably not going to get to get him too drunk.
Tom, you mentioned only 5% wine. Does it make a difference
with
white or red wine?
No, it's not. Ramban has a chiddush, and it's kiddush. The man is a big chiddush that you have to make kiddush tafkin red wine. Even there, we don't really pass it like it. So if you like white wine better. So even if it's kiddush, we'll make it. If you like white wine better, you'll have your white wine. Some folks can say that Ramban was only talking about when it's like an inferior quality wine. That wine, a white wine's $1,000 a bottle. Not the stuff I drink, but I'm saying.
Doesn't mean it's
going to
be great wine. I know, like, nowadays there's like a lot of other types of fermenting.
Yeah, no, wine means grapes. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you have to think about break off on it. Make shahakal on the other stuff. Okay, good. Because Chazal and Masakein, that you have to have your mishta, it has to be a suda, it has to be a simcha, so they wanted to make sure that it's not just a private simcha, they want to make sure the simcha is shared with other people. Because the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yom Tov that if a person makes a big party in Yom Tov and then the Noel Dalsus Beiso, then he locks up the doors of his house and he doesn't let anybody else in, he doesn't share with anyone who's less fortunate. So the Rambam says that's not Simchas Halev, that's Simchas Hakeres. That makes your stomach happy, that's not Simchas Halev. That's not the Simchas that the Torah wants us to have. So Chazal was very, very sensitive on Purim. Here we're making this whole big party, we're having a whole big Yisud, we're having Mishnah, Simchas, all these extra components. And now we're going to lock the door and not share the simcha with anybody else, so that's going to be a big problem. So Chazal went out of their way to bend over backwards to institute two different mitzvahs hayom to make sure that the simcha is shared with others. So one of the mitzvahs that Chazal instituted was the mitzvah b'shloach manos. So the Rambam writes that in the same halach, when the Rambam writes, Ketzel chob ha-sudah zu, how do you fulfill sudah yontif? The Rambam writes, v'cholik misudas al-acherim, that you have to take some of your food and share it with somebody else. So you get the impression from the Rambam that Mishloach Manos is not like what we do. The Mishloach Manos, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, you give a hamitash and a chokobah or something to somebody. But the real mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is you're sitting down to your suda, and then you take a plate of a piece of kohu, you take a piece of a chicken, and you go to your neighbor and say, listen, I want to share my suda with you. That's the real way. I didn't say you're not yotze with your hamitash. I didn't say you're not yotze the way we do it, but the way the Rambam is depicting the mitzvah, so it's much more sudas purim oriented. That's what the Tuvas Hadashin writes, that the whole goal of Mishloach Manos is to enable other people to have a suda, even though they're not necessarily poor. Sometimes the person just doesn't have food, they didn't get anything ready then. So to make sure that nobody in Klai shouldn't have a suda, that's the goal of Mishloach Manos. So that's what some poskim write, that it should be something that you would feel comfortable putting on the purim suda. If you give a person, give him a lollipop and a raisin or something, so he's probably not going to serve that as the main dish, probably not going to serve that as a side dish, probably serve it as a dessert. So something that wouldn't make it onto his purim suda, so maybe that's not considered to be the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. So it should be something that's a little, that doesn't have to be elaborate, should be something that's respectable to potentially eat as part of one's purim suda. The mitzvah of Talas Avionim is also geared toward this idea that we want to make sure you have other people who are shared in the Purim Suda. Unlike Mishloach Manos, which is geared primarily to Re'eyu, it's geared towards your friends, towards your colleagues. So when it comes to the mitzvah of Talas Avionim, it's geared towards a whole other segment of Chayso. It's geared to the people who never, Manos don't have any money to eat anything. So with Talas Avionim, so that went out of the way, there you have to give more. Not only you have to give to two of Yonim, Shach Manash, you can get away with one person, but Talas of Yonim you have to give to two, and the Rambam writes, You know, because the deal with that, if you have to figure out where to spend more money, should I spend a lot of money on these elaborate themes and putting together these wild shachmanis for 500 people, or should I take some of that money and give a couple of shachmanises and take most of that money and give it to Tzedakah, give it to the Talmud Sevyonim? The Rambam says, obviously, it's much better to give it to the Talmud Sevyonim. So, but the Talmud Sevyonim also is geared primarily towards the Suda. But here, Chazal didn't institute, they have to give Mamashu to their Niyim, you can give them money also, they just have to be able to use that money for the Suda. It doesn't mean they're going to use for the Suda. If you give it to them at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, they hate the Suda, they're not going to use it for the Suda. But you still yotze, as long as you give it to in a way that in theory you could use the money to buy something for the Suda. What would he have to buy for the Suda? What do you have to give him to buy for the Suda? You have to give him something that he could use for Suda's Purim. So you have to give him something of that he could buy Basav Yayin with. Let's say I give the Ani a nickel. You give him a nickel, what's he going to buy? How much? He can't buy a kazayis to meet with a nickel. He can't buy a cup of wine in a nickel. So maybe that's no good. So there's some folks who say, no, it's good enough. The pruta, as long as you give a pruta, that's tzedakah, matanah, that's a matanah, it's good enough. And others say, no, it's not enough. It's not like just giving tzedakah as a pruta. That's the matanah of Yodim, so that he could potentially get a suda with it. So now how much do you have to give? So you have to make a cheshbon. So how much is the cheapest piece of meat? What's the cheapest piece of meat? Well, a hot dog, how much a hot dog cost? Kosher hot dog. Across the street, how much it cost? What? $5. $5 for a hot dog and a bun. Yankee Stadium. Okay. Okay, so it's not a Yankee Stadium. Okay, so $5. How much would this 3 ounces of wine cost? How much is a bottle of wine? It's a bottle of wine, cheap bottle of wine. Cost you $7.50 for a cheap bottle of wine. So how many ounces? There's a lot of ounces in this. You get 10 guys to chip in to buy a bottle of wine. It'll cost you what? It'll cost you 50 cents to buy 3 ounces worth of wine. I don't know. So you have to make a cheshbon. How much? So you give a couple of dollars. If there's enough for both of the yain, and according to some lechem, so you have enough to fulfill the tzedakah of your teacher.
The tasters are free.
If
you go to one of those,
in Syria, you go around to different wine stores and you can get. Oh, okay. I don't think the tasters are revere stuff. Maybe very small things. You have to get a few of them. Okay.
The
Torah does speak about not inviting the Ger Yosef Yamana. Each of the Yom Tovim, the Torah does speak about that. So you're right. The specific takana of Matanos of Yonim that into the Daf and Purim, that you don't find by the other Yom Tovim. Right, right. Interesting. Right. That is correct. They have money. Yeah.
If you're on your parents.
If you're on your parents' money, that's a shiloh, whether you're covered by your parents. But even your parents give you some money. No, you have no money.
No,
nothing.
Really.
Here, come to me, I'll give you a few dollars. Okay. So most Bachim and Shiva have a few pennies to their own, so they should take some of that money. And they should
so how much
should you get? A hot dog, a bun, and a cup of wine. Like you figure it out.
All right.
Yeah. Are you okay if someone's giving money on your, like you're ready to give some money and they give it out on your behalf to someone that doesn't live in your city?
Yeah, you don't have to give. You don't have to know who the person is. I can give it to an organization as long as the organization is distributing the money on for it.
Okay,
that's what most of us do. That.
Does the mishloach manos need to be like in the Sina, or could it be like you host the Suda for people?
The Ikra did. If you invite people to the Suda, that's in the Sina. Okay, so we talked a little bit about Simchas Yom Tov in terms of halacha, and we highlighted the fact that there are certain similarities to Yom Tov and certain differences between Simchas Purim and Simchas Yom Tov. So I thought we'd just focus on one nakuda a little bit more in terms of machshava, almost a similarity and difference between the two, but I think it really drives home a major component of what Purim is all about. If you look at the model of simcha as it appears in the Chumash, so it seems to be a recurring theme. A simcha in the Torah always is related to the Beis HaMikdash. We mentioned that according to the view of Tosfos, it's only related to the Beis HaMikdash, and there's no simcha at all outside the Mikdash in the Torah and Yom Tov today. But the Rambam holds it's a lower level, watered down simcha, but even the Rambam concedes that the main mitzvah of simcha, the primary simcha, is clearly simcha HaMikdash. Not only in the context of Yom Tov do we find that simcha and HaMikdash go hand in hand, but we find it by starting the regular middle of the year, in a regular Tuesday in the middle of December, the guy decides to go to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Torah says, he can go and bring karbanos, v'chal tashlamim, and v'smachtam, the state of simcha. He's eating kabbalas, he's celebrating, he goes with his family not in Shoshu Golem, he goes to pilgrimage to Yerushalayim in the middle of the year, and he eats Besai Shlomim. That's a kabbalah, the time of Simcha. So there's a mitzvah of Simcha that's associated with the eating of Besai Shlomim. to such an extent that if a person is an oinin, a person just lost a relative, you're not allowed to eat chatas ayin. You're not allowed to eat karbanos in the state of aninos. So clearly the notion of eating karbanos is something which is a simple oriented experience. But the truth is, it's not even just karbanos. Even just eating a ma'aseh sheni, which is not even in the Beit HaMikdash, it's in Yerushalayim, which is the outermost precincts of the Beit HaMikdash, there's also an idea of simcha. The Torah says, "Samachta tov esecha." So there seems to be a common theme here that every time I come to Yerushalayim, either for a lila regel, for a celebration of Yontif, for chiyus shalom during the course of the year, ma'aseh sheni, anywhere I turn, there always seems to be a notion of simcha. The Gemara goes even one step further. The Gemara says in my Katan that the Kohen Gadol has the status of simcha as a Yontif the entire year. Because why? Because he's in the Mikdash the whole year. He's always with Hashem. Hashem told me he's always in front of Rabban Shalom. So for him, it's like a Yom Tov the entire year. So what is the underlying theme of all of these halachas? That Ma'aseh Sheni and Karbanos and the regel, everything is Simcha. So the Rav had a famous idea. The Rav explained that Simcha is being in the state of in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person has that feeling that they're in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the only emotion that they're filled with is Simcha, tremendous joy. The reason why we're not so happy, most of us walk around all day miserable about we're worried about school, we're worried about this, we're upset about that. Why? Because the more that we're distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the less happy we are. The closer that we're to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the happier we become. There's a clear correlation between the two. So when a person comes very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they have that sense of, I'm sitting in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's house, went to visit his Beit HaMikdash, I brought Karbanos to him, and I'm meeting his Ma'aseh Sheni in Yerushalayim. So I feel that geographic proximity as well as a spiritual proximity, so that fills the person with a tremendous sense of joy. That's what the Rav explained. That's why Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur also is Ma'anim of Simcha, according to most Hashanim, just a certain degree, Simcha is Yom Tov and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Well, where's Simcha is Yom Tov and Yom Kippur? You're not eating Basar and Yayin. The Rav explained that what creates a distance between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Averis, you're doing a veira, so that distance, your starting point, everybody enters into this world very, very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Before you were born, your neshama was mamash taken from the next to the Kisei HaKavod. So we're very, very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we enter into this world, so we're a little baby, so we didn't do anything wrong. So we're still very, very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As we get a little older, we start to do things wrong, so we start to chisel away, we start to distance, we start to create these barriers between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So those barriers interfere with that ability to feel the joy of being with Hashem, because we're talking not with Hashem, because there's a mechitza preventing us, separating us. When a person is chozer b'tshuva and Hashem Yom Kippur, so those mechitzas come down, so then all of a sudden they find themselves right back where they were before they were born. They find themselves back in that close proximity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So whenever a person feels that proximity to the Ribbono Shel Olam, either physically or spiritually, either by Beis HaMikdash or through the vehicle of tshuva, there's a tremendous sense of simcha that permeates, because that's exactly what simcha is. Simcha is being in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the reason why Tam HaTorah is such a pleasurable, such a joyful experience, because Hashem Hashem is Amchalei. That's why in Avol you can't learn in Tishra, because it's such a davar shel simcha. Whenever there's a Askar Hashem Hashem, whenever a person is involved in the study of the Kadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, so Kadosh Baruch Hu comes, Kadosh Baruch Hu is there. So there's a tremendous Ashras Hashchina, there's Lifnei Hashem, it's like Mikdash. So there's a tremendous sense of joy, of simcha. So Purim, the background, the historical background, the Purim was a very, very depressing time. Klai Yisrael, no doubt, if you had to take a pulse of the national emotion and feeling of the people at the time, it probably would have been pretty low, probably would have been miserable. Why? Because they had no feeling of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in any sense, any shape or form. Because first of all, everything took place outside of Eretz Yisrael. So there was no Beis HaMikdash. So for half hundreds and hundreds of years, they were used to the notion of Aliyah L'Regel and Beis HaMikdash, that's where we connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And here, just a few decades before, that it was taken from them. So they don't have a Beis HaMikdash, they don't even have Eretz Yisrael. They're living far geographically away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And not only that, but there's a sense of Hester Panim. They don't even feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about them. They don't feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching them. And the Gemara says, they were right. They were right that he took a step back. That's what's called Hester Panim. That's exactly Remez Esther in Atarbi 9, Hester Panim Yelahu. That the whole background of Purim, where the Jewish people living in Golos, living in Churban, living in a foreign culture with some of the foreign values that we spoke a little bit about yesterday, and it was very, very hard to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was very, 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 lack of a feeling that HaKadosh Baruch Hu really was close to them at all. And then when this decree came that they're all going to be destroyed, so that was almost a nail on the coffin. That means they taka realize we're right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't care about us. That there was a churban, and our must be that our bris of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was broken. This is the Gemara says that that after the Churban, so people approached Yecheskel HaNavi and they asked him with honesty, do we have to keep mitzvahs anymore? That why do we have to keep mitzvahs? Because Baruch Hu doesn't care about us. Obviously, he threw us out of Eretz Yisrael. He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So, the bris is over. Mistama, our agreement is over. So that was the feeling. That was the permeating feeling. That there was this feeling of a distance from the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And then all of a sudden everything changed. Mamish and drop the hat, all of a sudden everything changed. And then Chalal Yisrael came to the realization that the Kodesh Baruch Hu was very, very much watching over them. He was watching over them even at a time when it looked like he wasn't. It was a nace nistar. It was a nace of hest upon him. But even at a time when it looked like the Kodesh Baruch Hu was far, far away, he was really there all along. Meitis v'nacharakim, as Chazal say. He was looking, he was peeping between the cracks. He was still up and watching them, even though for all those years they didn't realize it. So the feeling that happened as the nace of Purim began to unfold and people realized what happened, there was a tremendous sigh of relief in terms of, wow, you know, we were saved from Haman. Wow, gee, we got out of that one till the next problem. It was much deeper than that. It wasn't just a nace of a salvation, a physical salvation, but it was a reawakening, it was a re-feeling of a closeness, of a proximity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That feeling, that closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that carries with it a tremendous sense of simcha, a tremendous sense of joy. And that's the major component of the Simcha Purim. The Simcha Purim is mamish ke'ein yantif, but it's in a certain sense a higher degree than yantif, because when you're afraid that you lose something and then you get it back, so when you finally get it back, that's an even greater sense of simcha. So the Yom Tovim in the Beis HaMikdash was bonded, everything was everything was going well. So yeah, they liked it. It was nice. They appreciated everything, but they appreciated the simcha so much greater at the time of Purim. So Chazal went overboard in terms of Purim. Lasso sabi mei mishne v'simcha. That they wanted to celebrate that Purim should be days of tremendous, tremendous joy, because there were days when we went from Hest Aponim to Ashuas Hashchina. So that transformation from Hest Aponim to Ashuas Hashchina, even if it's derech nes nistar, it brings a tremendous sense of joy for us as individuals and us, and for Klai Yisrael as a whole. So it's a tremendous, tremendous couple of hours coming ahead of us. It's really something to get every last moment, every moment of closeness to Kodesh Baruch Hu, to fulfill the mitzvah sayom, kedasu chedin, that the Chazal instituted Baruch HaKodesh, the mitzvah sayom, that each one of these mitzvahs gets us one step closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu. So to not to waste Purim, not to get sidetracked with some of the things that people end up doing on Purim, that end up not enhancing but detracting from the closeness to Kodesh Baruch Hu. So everything should be done with that goal in hand, to be able to reconnect to Kodesh Baruch Hu of Kima V'Kiblu. So I wish everyone a wonderful, wonderful days of Purim. Hope that Hashem, I want to be at the Chagiga tonight, I want to be around, hope that Hashem will get a chance to have some... Okay. Doing well.